You're listening live to Right Side Radio with Phil Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right.
News Talk 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN. Phil Williams here, Right Side Radio. Like the dude said, we are indeed solid, conservative, and just plain right. Time right now, 3:07 p.m., a little bit of breaking news. The president is on Capitol Hill. He just walked through the doors a while ago. And apparently it's a long walk because they've been showing the scene of him walking down the halls with the Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, headed towards a big meeting with the Democrats, trying to arm wrestle them into voting for his massive spending spree. You know what's crazy is he wants this bill done, and it's a Bernie Sanders-style bill, and yet he campaigned as not being Bernie Sanders in terms of the socialist agenda that Bernie always brings. This is a socialist agenda-style bill, and yet Biden wants it badly, but he said he wasn't that guy. Well, that's what happens when you elect people because you're scared of mean tweets from the other guy, as opposed to the policies that the person has always stood for. And there we are. So there's that. Hey, listen, I got to tell you real quickly about my friends at Otter Creek Farm because they are amazingly cool. So Otter Creek Farm is right here in North Alabama. I go out there all the time. My friends Frank and Jane own and run the place. It's a wing shooting destination. Like if you like to hunt pheasant and quail, you can stay overnight there in their beautiful facilities. You can also have a wedding there. You can have a corporate retreat there. But they have an amazing culinary staff. Oh my gosh, this place is incredible. Check out their website, OtterCreekFarmstead.com, OtterCreekFarmstead.com. And when you do, you'll quickly realize why they were featured in Garden and Gun magazine and why Donald Trump Jr. came there to stay overnight for a hunt not long ago. Oh yeah, OtterCreekFarmstead.com. Hey, listen, I'm going to finish up this thing about the Climate Corps. Ugh, this wears me out, man. So the Washington Times has a great article. I just posted it on my Twitter feed if you want to see. You can find me on Twitter, by the way, at Sen Phil Williams. That's S-E-N, at Sen Phil Williams. Title of the article, Dems Proposed Civilian Climate Corps Fuels Fears of a Green New Deal Army. See, this is not just Williams' language here, all right? This is what the world is saying. And they're saying right now in this article by Valerie Richardson at the Washington Times, which was published just in the last couple of weeks, says there's money that is allegedly going to be siphoned off in the $3.5 trillion reconciliation package that was desperately needed for the private sector, but it instead would fund, she kind of tongue-in-cheek, but she says, a federally funded battalion of Greta Thunbergs. Yeah. And so President Biden, though, himself has called for this. When I say it's AOC's army, when I say that, you know, Senator Markey is in with her, understand this. This is something that President Biden himself has been calling for. So this is not like, well, the president did it to get some votes. No. I mean, I'm looking at another article here from, who was this for? CNN? Yes, I know. I go to CNN once in a while. But CNN had an article that came out 2 days ago. Yeah, 2 days ago. Rachel Ramirez at CNN writes that, reminding us that recently when the president met with governors from Western states that were dealing with wildfires, that he highlighted, in his opinion, one way to tackle the climate crisis was to build a civilian climate corps. That's what he said, his words. He felt like that may have been when he went off script and they cut off his microphone. But early estimates right now are, like I said, they would have 1.5 million Americans working in forest management, fire mitigation, climate resiliency, whatever that is, and conservation projects. And so, folks, this goes on and on. And I'm not going to keep beating it up, but you got to know it's in there. This is what they're trying to do. When Josh Hawley's quote a while ago said, it's about spending money to remake the country, this is it. And President Biden himself has been calling for it, literally calling for it. And don't think for a second it's going to be so they can go out there and clean the trails, you know, in the national parks. I mean, AOC said herself when I played her clip a while ago, it's also to get into the urban environments. The urban environments, so that we can help to deal with environmental injustice. And one of the biggest advocates for this is a liberal activist group called the Sunrise Movement. Go look them up. The Sunrise Movement, which wants to include more traditional climate careers in this and jobs that make communities strong and more resilient. And they go on and on and on. Anyway, folks, I'm just telling you, Mark my words, right here at 3:12 p.m. on Friday afternoon, October 1st, 2021, Phil Williams says they are trying to build a climate army on your dime, and if they get this bill passed, they'll have it. So you better be praying that the breakdown among the Democrat caucus continues. Thank you, Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema. Who, by the way, other breaking news, Kyrsten Sinema is not even in D.C. anymore. She's already left and gone back to Arizona. So that's if that's not a clear repudiation, I don't know what is. Hey, let me switch gears on you, though. I'm gonna head down to the Triple Dipper, all right? The Triple Dipper for the day. I said I got three storylines you got to follow. And this is how I'm sort of guiding my show these days. The Triple Dipper of the day, the first one I've already covered there, the fact that AOC is building her green army using your tax dollars. But the second one is this, the Second Amendment. The Second Amendment is on trial. What did he say? The Second Amendment on trial? Yes, it actually is. Now, keep in mind where we are, all right? This is Alabama. Alabama has some of the best laws in terms of preserving our Second Amendment rights of any in the nation. And there are some who will say, no, we didn't go far enough. It still goes further than most. And so, first of all, understand this. It's embedded in our state constitution, not just the U.S. Constitution, but our state constitution, Article 1, Section 26. Every citizen has a fundamental right to bear arms in defense of himself or herself and the state. Any restriction on this right shall be subject to strict scrutiny. What that means is the highest possible standard of judicial review would be brought to bear against anybody's infringements under state law, not just federal law. And it says in here, no citizen shall be compelled by any international treaty, international law, or otherwise to take an action that prohibits, limits, or otherwise interferes with his or her fundamental right to keep and bear arms. So folks, that's your state constitution, Alabama. Good to know. Alabama state laws also. We are one of those states that allows possession of firearms without any licensure. We do not require any special permits for purchase. We don't require any registration of firearms. We are an open carry state, meaning you can open carry all you want to. We do have a concealed carry permit requirement, but however, it is a shall issue. When you say that, what does that mean, Phil? Shall issue. Okay, lawyer Phil talking here, and I saw it a lot in the legislature. It's a big, big, big difference when you write a bill, and the bills become law, when that sentence that you're looking at, that operative language, includes a may versus a shall. Some states like to do their gun laws with things like permits may be issued. Well, may leaves room to not, all right? But when you have, like Alabama's law, that we are a shall issue state, what that means is in the law, they shall issue you one. They cannot find grounds for not doing so. Now, are there going to be things that happen? I'm certain that there are. If you are a felon, if there's some other reason why you don't qualify, I understand. But for the most part, we are a shall-issue state. So some of my Second Amendment folks, I know you get fired up. Don't call in and say, you got the wrong, man. We got to have constitutional carry and all that. I get it. I know that. But by and large, Alabama is better in terms of firearms laws than any other state around. But look at what happens when your states don't have the kind of laws that preserve the Second Amendment. Smith & Wesson, have y'all heard this news? This is breaking today. Smith & Wesson has been in Springfield, Massachusetts since 1852. They have been in Springfield, Massachusetts. They are moving their operations to Tennessee. My only regret is they're not moving it to Alabama. But Smith & Wesson is moving its headquarters to Tennessee because Massachusetts has proposed gun legislation that, if it was passed, would instantly disallow Smith & Wesson from producing the things that they get 60% of their revenue from. In other words, it would put Smith & Wesson out of business. So they're saying, you know what? We're not waiting around. We're tired of dealing with you. We're tired of being in a state that does not care about the fact that we bring a whole lot of employment and tax revenue into the state. We're heading down south, coming down to Maryville, Tennessee, just north of Knoxville, upward of 750 jobs moving their headquarters to Maryville, Tennessee. Smith & Wesson has been located there, like I said, since 1852, and they are bailing out of Massachusetts. Here's the quote from their CEO, Mark Smith. He says, these bills would prevent Smith & Wesson from manufacturing firearms that are legal in almost every state in America and that are safely used by tens of millions of law-abiding citizens every day exercising their constitutional Second Amendment rights. So you see what happens when your state does not preserve your constitutional liberties? You lose jobs. Yes. But then there's other things happening, and I'm going to get around to it in a minute. I said that the Second Amendment's on trial. Yes, it is. Big, big doings. I'm coming down to it. But before I get there, let me tell you about something else that just happened. So I was pretty chagrined to find out that the National Defense Authorization Act, which is basically the funding of the military, and I got a heart for this, all right? I got a heart for the fact that the military is funded. I've got family members in the military. I've got generational Army service in my family to include my own. I want the military funded. The other day I had a whole section on the fact that the military is a petri dish for social experimentation by liberals. And they put all kinds of stuff in these NDAAs, these National Defense Authorization Acts. And so literally they funded the government or they funded the military, but here's the kind of things they did. They included what they call certain anti-gun provisions, including red flag provisions. So the red flag provisions that basically got in under the radar literally say that military personnel, if there is a quote-unquote red flag, like someone reports them and claims that they have mental health issues, someone claims that they are in some way unstable or they are accused of something but not yet convicted, these are just red flags. They're not convictions. They're not adjudications. They're not saying they have been declared incompetent by a court of law. They've been denied due process, and they are having their weapons seized because it literally says in here that military personnel could be forcibly disarmed of their lawfully possessed firearms before even having a chance to contest the accusations against them and present evidence in their defense. That's in the NDAA. That's the military. Now, if there's any aspect of our society that has what I would call a higher level of general competence with firearms, it's going to be the military. Our veteran community has had more hands-on time than the majority of the civilian populace. I can just tell you right now, I feel very comfortable with an AR platform and with the sidearms that I carried in the military. I'm good with that. And they transitioned with me. I didn't leave those skills. When I walked out of uniform and left it behind, I didn't leave my skills back there. I took them with me. The military is the same way. And they're going to say that that community, is going to be subject to red flag laws. I hope there's a suit filed sometime soon. But there was something else in there, too, that I don't know how it even got in. There was a thing called the Torres Amendment. Representative Norma Torres, a Democrat from California. There you go. She's undoing some of the export reform regulations that the Trump administration had put in place. And basically what hers did, her amendment, empowered anti-gun legislators to inject politics. I hear the music, Copper. I got long, didn't I? Well, listen, I'm fired up because of the Second Amendment. When we come back, I'm going to tell you about a Supreme Court case. I know. Thank you, Copper, for the smiley face. I appreciate that. But the reality is the Supreme Court is taking up a major Second Amendment piece of litigation that could have a landmark opportunity to shape the way we go forward on Second Amendment rights in the United States. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We'll see how much time we have left when we come back from my overrun here. We'll be right back after this. News Talk 770 AM, 92.5 FM. Phil Williams here hosting Right Side Radio on WVNN, the News Talk powerhouse in North Alabama. The biggest show in the afternoons across North Alabama is indeed this one. Hey, so listen, I have been talking to you about the fact that we've got breaking news. We got breaking news in two places right now. Let me just tell you this real quickly. So breaking news number one is up on Capitol Hill. The president is in the caucus meeting right now with Democrats, pleading with them, begging them, I imagine. Perhaps there's tears and gnashing of teeth. I don't know. But he is literally up there pleading for the lifeblood of his domestic agenda, which, you know, he's been up there long enough to where he knows the process. You would think he would have recognized that trying to put all of that stuff into one bill was not going to work. And I think what they did was they also misunderstood. You know, they split the bill. It was all one batch of stuff, including real infrastructure and then all of the fluffy human infrastructure stuff that I've told you about so many times in the big bill. And they split it out. They got an agreement with 19 Republican senators out of the Senate, and they agreed to split out real infrastructure into a smaller $1.3 trillion bill, and they got it out of the Senate and sent it down to the House. What they didn't see coming was the force of 70 progressives in the progressive caucus in the House who said, no, we ain't playing your games, and we're not going to vote for that. And don't even have us vote on that smaller spending bill, the bipartisan bill, they call it, unless you're going to give us the big honking bill with Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's climate core and tree equity and everything else I have been telling you about for days. They didn't see this coming. And then on top of that, what they didn't see coming was that if they can even get that thing passed, what's going to happen when they have to send it upstairs to the Senate, or across the hall to the Senate? They're going to send it across the hall, and you've got two Democrats, Kyrsten Sinema and Joe Manchin, who have said, we're not voting for that. Nope. Well, they can't lose a single vote in the Senate. They can't lose it. So right now, Biden, breaking news is that Biden is in the caucus meeting on Capitol Hill pleading for the lifeblood of his domestic agenda right now. The other thing is that as we speak right now, Governor Ivey in the state of Alabama here, Governor Ivey is about to sign the prison legislation that was completed today. So they're taking their victory laps down in Montgomery. It's taken years. We worked on this multiple years while I was in Montgomery and couldn't get it through the House. But the House came on board with the plan now. The Senate passed it today after the House had already taken care of it earlier in the week. And the Speaker of the House, I'm looking at one clip right now with the Speaker of the House, Mac McCutcheon from Huntsville, who was reminding Representative Jerry Nadler up in D.C. to mind his own business. And the governor is preparing a bill signing ceremony to sign that prison construction plan into law and get it going. So, folks, there's breaking news. Now, when we come back, I've got something you're going to want to hear. I held off on it because I talked too long in my last segment because I was fired up. But now what I'm going to do is I'm going to come back after this next break. And in a minute, I've got a Supreme Court case, a Supreme Court of the United States case, a Supreme Court of the United States case that they are saying is something that could literally change the lay of the land, legally speaking, for preservation of Second Amendment rights. This is big doings, y'all. This is the biggest thing in well over a decade to impact gun rights. And if it happens, it's going to be good, good news. It comes out of New York. It's got all the way to the Supreme Court. And we've had a conservative block of justices that have agreed to take it up. I'll tell you about how that works and why this could matter to you right here in Alabama, even though we have some of the better laws for gun ownership in the nation. Phil Williams, News Talk 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN, and live online at rightsideradio.org. That's rightsideradio.org. Back in just a minute. News Talk 770 AM, 92.5 FM. Phil Williams here hosting Right Side Radio on WVNN, the News Talk powerhouse in North Alabama. This is the biggest show across the northern part of our state. Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right. Here's a bit of breaking news, too, the kind that I hate to have to bring to you. So right here in the listening area, we've got two police officers down. One Muscle Shoals officer and one Sheffield officer. Apparently, they're both collaborating, working together on a high-speed chase, and both have been shot. I don't know their conditions. It's just saying here the conditions of the officers are not immediately available. Story by William Thornton on AL.com. So that's right here in our listening area. We also have another police officer from Warrior down south near the Birmingham area who was shot multiple times last night. And is, I believe, expected to recover. And they've just announced that they have a suspect, and they are warrants have been issued for his arrest. So, folks, that's what I know right now. I hate to bring that kind of news, but I think for those of you that are praying people and who love your folks in blue, this is something worth praying over. That's three police officers in one 24-hour period right here in Alabama, two of which are right here in this listening area. So, blessings on them. So listen, I'm going to go back to this storyline, all right? I've got some clips I'm going to play here to help elaborate on why I think this is such a big deal. All right, I've got one news source that put together a story that I've got two clips from that describe why it's such a big deal. So here's the bottom line, all right? A case out of New York. The Supreme Court of the United States has just said they will take it up. It's a case called New York State Rifle and Pistol Association versus Corlett, all right? It's a claim that New York State's 100-year-old special permitting process for being able to carry a firearm outside of your home violates the Second Amendment. Yes, it does. And so what we're looking at right now is it's hard to get a case in front of SCOTUS. It's hard to get a case up there to actually be heard. They have a thing. Let me back up and explain this in case you haven't heard it before. They have a thing called the Rule of Four. They won't even take up a case at the Supreme Court of the United States unless four of the justices agree to take it up. So four out of the nine-member panel have to agree to take it up. And it typically takes five to form a majority block, right? So this encourages what some political scientists have called a strategic behavior where the four who agree to it obviously reasonably believe that they can convince another one of their colleagues to join them so they don't accidentally end up being on the losing side of a case that they decided to take up, right? Well, four of the justices have agreed to take up this case, New York State Rifle and Pistol Association versus Corlett. And now it's been a while since we've had a landmark case on Second Amendment issues, but this one is believed to be one. Copper, if you've got clip four, let's see. Yeah, let's go ahead and clip four. You got it ready? Give me the high sign if you're ready on that, and we'll move straight to that. All right, clip four, Copper, go ahead and play it.
This is a landmark case that will set the stage for future gun control laws in this country. Tom King, president of the New York State Rifle and Pistol Association, argues that New York's gun laws are so strict, it's made it nearly impossible for anyone to carry a gun out in public.
We decided that we were going to try to change that and to make sure that New York State residents who want a pistol permit, a concealed carry permit, are given the same protections under the law that everybody else in the other 42 states are given.
New York has some of the strictest gun laws in the country.
So there you go. They do. They have some of the strictest gun laws in the country there. I mean, literally, let's say you finally get the permit to have a firearm at your house. It's big doings, right? I mean, how many firearms do I have at my house? You don't want to know. But the reality is to get these firearms, the permits, to be allowed to even have one, what happens if you have two houses? You're not allowed to transport it from one to the other. It was registered to one address. What if you want to take it with you to, say, a gun range in New Jersey? You're not supposed to be able to travel with it outside the house. So, folks, this is absolutely ridiculous. If you want, by the way, if you want to have a citizen who understands and feels confident with the use of a firearm, you allow them to go and train on it. You allow them to go and, you know, and have opportunities at the range to practice their skills, to get their muscle memory down, to make sure they understand the safety aspects, to make sure that they are comfortable and competent with that firearm. Because if you don't, that's how accidents happen. So what is this thing? Is it supposed to be a paperweight for your house? It's not. What good is having a firearm if you don't know how to use it? How safe is it to have a firearm you don't know how to use? And so these gun laws in New York State have been draconian for years. Well, back in 2008, we had a Supreme Court case. The SCOTUS took one up then called D.C. versus Heller. And the Second Amendment was considered something up until that time that we weren't sure where the courts would be. Was it just for a, quote, well-regulated militia, which is kind of the phraseology of the Second Amendment? No. In that particular case, the Heller case, a five-justice majority, with the opinion written by Justice Antonin Scalia, insisted that, quote, the right secured by the Second Amendment was robust enough to warrant striking down Washington, D.C.'s handgun ban. And that was back in 2008. But since that time, whereas conservatives and libertarians have been praising that decision, we have not seen anything else come up like this. And the fact that SCOTUS has agreed to take up this New York case now with the new conservative majority that we have, well, some are saying that this thing could be a game changer. And Justice Thomas, he himself has written that the time has now come, he believes, to decide whether the Second Amendment protects more than just the right to carry a gun from the bedroom to the kitchen. And I agree with that. We've got a law professor in this next clip that I want to play. Copper, I see you got clip 5 ready. Go ahead and play it.
Albany law professor Vincent Bonventri says this case will have an enormously broad impact. It will decide if states and the federal government have the right to impose stringent gun control laws.
So on the one hand, is the individual right to bear arms a fundamental right, which means that it's going to be very, very, very difficult for state governments or the federal government to restrict those rights? Or is that other part of Heller, which what we look at, which is that, longstanding prohibitions, reasonable restrictions are fine. We don't know. This case will tell us.
The Supreme Court will hear this case at the start of their next term, which begins on the first Monday in October. Reporting for Spectrum News, I'm Morgan Mackay.
Okay, so the first Monday in October, Monday is when this session begins. I went to SCOTUS blog. SCOTUS blog is basically just where you can keep up with what's going on in the Supreme Court. I know it sounds kind of, it sounds kind of eggheadish to say it, but I did. I went to SCOTUS blog. So this case is currently set. New York State Rifle and Pistol Association is set to be heard for oral arguments on November 3rd. All right, November 3rd. So we're right at 10 over a month away. One of the landmark cases on Second Amendment rights. And if you heard that law professor a minute ago from Albany say, this is something that will impact the nation. It's not going to be, when a Supreme Court case comes up, it may say New York State on it, but the fact that it's the New York State Rifle and Pistol Association could easily apply to the Alabama Rifle and Pistol Association. It could. There's no doubt about it. Because what's going to do is it's going to decide that this is a true right that cannot be infringed upon by state laws and local restrictions. And I'll be honest with you, when I was in the state legislature, I would see bills come up, and more than once, I sponsored something myself to help maintain, preserve, or enhance Second Amendment rights. Other times, I pushed back on them. And I remember one time going to the podium, I had a bill that would have, I'm trying to think which municipality it was, but we had one municipality that was trying to put in some of its own permitting stipulations. And so I had a bill that would have regulated some of that and said no. And I was pointing out to them that we have other places right now where the Second Amendment is being infringed on, just even by like local sheriffs. Like one local sheriff, I want to say it was up in Maine, required people to have to write a paper to tell why they needed a permit. Well, what happens if you're illiterate? Are you not allowed to have a permit then? We also had another community where it was determined that you had to pay an excessive fee. And then you also have some communities that are trying to do things like taxing ammunition just to make it impossible to even have gun ownership. And by taxation, what they're doing is they're creating an infringement by means of another route. And so I'm just telling you, this case right now is big doings. And I got a caller on line 5, so let's see how this goes. Paul from Athens. Hey, Paul, Phil Williams here on Right Side Radio. What's on your mind?
Yes, Phil. I just want to comment on this there. The argument often used by the anti-gun liberals here that the well-regulated militia referred to the National Guard. Refer them to their history there. The National Guard did not exist back at the time the Second Amendment was written. There, the Second Amendment referred to the common farmer and his flintlock. And furthermore, the well-regulated aspect of that meant that these local militias there were led by popular election there in their own locale there. That's what real well-regulated militia meant there. An autonomous force there on a local basis, elected, popularly elected by the citizens of the community. That's what the well-regulated militia is, you anti-gun liberals. It's not referring to the National Guard. The National Guard did not exist then.
Okay. Hey, Paul, thanks, man. And you are correct, and I'll go ahead one step further. I think it goes further than that, Paul. I mean, I think the Heller case clearly defines that is not even a question of, quote, well-regulated militia. It's a question of a right of the individual. And the militia back then was literally, it was the common man. It was a citizen of the community. It was not something that you had to be well-regulated in terms of being formed as a militia of some point, of some kind. You were literally, everyone was considered a part. When there was a crisis in the community, they could call up the citizens. I mean, if you go back and look at history, you'll find that in the French and Indian Wars, it was the community rising up to go and defend their situation. In the Revolution, very often, it was not just an organized Continental Army. It was the militia, which was basically the citizens who said, I'll leave my farm for a time and go and do that which is necessary. And so, you know, the point is well taken to my last caller that yeah, it's not the National Guard. It's not that at all. And that's a farcical argument. And the Supreme Court's already rejected that, so I'm not even worried about that anymore. But this particular case, this is also going to test another piece of the Biden agenda. When we get back, I'm going to tell you, in this case that's coming up, what is the Biden administration saying about it? Well, they're saying stuff. They're participating. You might be curious as to which side they're participating on. We're going to take a short break right now. When I come back, I'll tell you how the Biden administration views Supreme Court cases on Second Amendment rights. Yep, big doings. All right, folks, Right Side Radio. I didn't talk too long that time, Copper. We'll be right back after this. News Talk 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN. Phil Williams here, Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right. So I told you right before the last break that I was coming back and I was going to tell you, what's the Biden administration saying about this Supreme Court's case, the New York Rifle and Pistol Association v. Corlett, being taken up by SCOTUS for arguments on November 4th. It could be a landmark case on Second Amendment rights. Well, the Biden administration, of course, is weighing in by means of their of the Attorney General Merrick Garland. Remember Merrick Garland? That's right. He wanted to be literally be on the Supreme Court. Glad he's not there, because he has now filed on behalf of the administration. The Biden administration has filed what's called an amicus brief, which means we are a friend to the issue that we're taking up, and they are a friend to the opposition in this case. Go figure. And they go on and talk about the fact that, you know, literally the Biden administration does not appreciate the Second Amendment. The Biden administration is anti-gun, and A.G. Garland is advocating the Supreme Court basically remove the right to bear arms from the U.S. Constitution. And the administration's brief goes on and argues for what it calls reasonable regulation standards for gun control with what they call intermediate scrutiny. In other words, it would not be strict scrutiny. So they're literally trying to take this to places where the case wasn't even designed to go. And activists and anti-gun courts have been using those same kind of standards for years to try and uphold what I called earlier the May issue licensing schemes and create sweeping bans on firearm ownership. So folks, the Attorney General of the United States, the guy who wanted to be on the Supreme Court but we didn't let him in, is filed a brief right now that would go even further than what the case could go. It would ask the Supreme Court to not just strike down any attempts to overrule the New York case right now, but they literally are asking for additional standards, like reducing the review of Second Amendment cases to intermediate scrutiny as opposed to strict scrutiny. That's a big deal in legal words. They also want to allow for states to be able to apply, quote, reasonable regulation standards, reasonable being in the eyes of the state actors themselves, and remove the right to, quote, bear arms from the U.S. Constitution, which I don't think they can do through the courts. That's just amazing to me. All right, well, I knew Second Amendment would generate some calls, so I see I got Scott on line one. Hey, Scott, Phil Williams here on Right Side Radio. What's on your mind, man?
Yeah, so every member of the male population, 17 to 45, according to U.S. Code Title 10, Chapter 12, is part of the militia. So we all have the right to buy a weapon.
Well, that's neat, but I understand what you're saying, but good luck trying to go and arguing that to the sheriff who's issuing the gun permit or making that a part of your background check when you go to apply for, you know, a weapon sale. I hear what you're saying, but those arguments don't really stand up when we go to court. I mean, that's kind of like fringe argument in a sense. What we're dealing with here is what are they going to do with cases where they've actually limited pure ownership and we're trying to get that struck down.
but the right shall not be infringed if you're a member of the militia, and since every male from 17 to 45 is a member of the militia.
Well, I think I hear your point, and I think that's I think it's well taken. I do think that that's kind of the way it was intended, was that we would have the militia being the average citizen. But I don't think you can even argue that truly in the right way, because it says every male. Does that mean females can't own them? And I think that what we have to look at for is it was intended to be citizens. But yeah, I hear your point. And Scott, thanks for calling in. Listen, so the bottom line is this, folks. We have a situation right now where the Second Amendment is technically on trial. And I hope that all of y'all are paying attention, because as surely as they are trying to outspend every liberal issue in D.C., they are also doing things in the courts that are intent upon taking away some of the constitutional rights that you have. And folks, it is not something that we should take idly. It is not something that we should sit by and go, huh, reckon how that's going to go. I'm just telling you, this case being argued on November 4th could be a landmark case that makes a great deal of has a great deal of impact on your ability to have gun ownership in the United States, not just New York Rifle and Pistol Association, but in the United States. Hey, folks, we're winding down this segment right now, but I got to tell you breaking news. So it appears that the Biden meeting with the Democrat caucus has ended. He's walking out right now. Everybody's herding out the door. I don't see them walking in lockstep per se, but there is a quote on the screen right now. Let me see if I can go to the news and find any more about it. There's a quote on the screen right now from Congresswoman Jayapal, who is the caucus chair for the Progressive Caucus, saying we will have to come down from our $3.5 trillion. What does that even mean? I'm guessing what it means is they're going to continue negotiations and try to find a number they can agree on. But, you know, the point they're going to have there, the problem they're going to have with that, is that once you begin to take something out of the bill to make it more palatable in terms of its cost, someone's going to get mad because you took out their thing. And they're going to want to know why you took out their thing and not somebody else's thing. So what do we do then? Downscale all the things? This is not over by a stretch. I'm looking at a headline right now on Fox. White House slams the GOP and House for having no real courage. We didn't get our way, therefore it's their fault because they have no courage. Okay. As the Dems clash over Biden's socialist spending bill. We got other articles here. Top Republicans like Lindsey Graham and McConnell demand to reveal the, quote, true cost of Biden's socialist plan. Because some do say, by the way, it costs $3.5 trillion in terms of the estimate being floated by the proponents of the bill. Others say it's technically well over $5 trillion. It's unreal. It's unreal. It's ungodly. And I look at this thing and I'm thinking, what, who does this? All right, folks. Well, listen, it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. But right now, I don't think they've reached any consensus and they're going home for the weekend is my bet. Let me see if I can find anything here. The news is telling me, trying to break something for you. No, they're just digging at each other. And they failed to reach a deal. And Pelosi is putting off the vote. Yeah, headline here, as of 20 minutes ago, Pelosi delays vote on infrastructure bill as the Dems fail to reach a deal. Psaki admits that Biden will likely not get his full $3.5 trillion spending proposal. I'd be happy if he didn't get any of it. That's the most ridiculous piece of legislation. That is nothing but fluff with a dollar sign is all that is. Fluff with a dollar sign. Lots of dollar signs, to be honest. All right, folks. We come back, I'm going to switch gears. We got to move through the triple dipper. I got some more stuff you're going to want to hear, and it looks like I may have a caller coming in at 4:30 that I'll tell you about after the top of the hour. News coming up. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. We will be right back.